Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and welcome everybody, as you always are, on Fridays live here in Southern California. LA Talk Radio, on the couch with Dr. Michelle. And I've got a great show for you today, as always. We're going to help you out, particularly a lot of women. And guys, you know, if you're listening too, I really encourage you to keep it here listening as well, because you're going to learn a lot about the women in your life. And what they may be experiencing, and why they're experiencing it, because it's a great book we're talking about today. And, of course, I have the author live here on the line. She's a medical doctor, of course, psychiatrist, professor, university, of course, like I said, a hospital psychiatrist. And so we're going to be talking a lot about things associated with different life stages of women. Symptoms, feelings, things that happen, come up, and how to sort of manage some of these mental health issues and physical issues as well. Did you guys know that women are actually twice as likely as men to become depressed? Yeah, a lot of men out there are shaking their heads. Yes, probably so. But while we seek help for mental disorders more often than men, we also try to help others. You know, we are the caregivers. Let's face it. And we try to keep everybody happy. We're juggling all the balls. Come on, girls. You know you're doing that. We've taken care of parents, right, when they get older, spouses, kids, children, older adults, especially these days. We're really helping our older adult children. And sometimes we're doing it too much. You know, we're multitasking. We're good at that. So today I'm going to be talking about women who are dealing with issues related to their particular stage in life. We're also going to talk about some common mental disorders, you know, issues that come up during these different life stages. And, you know, I get a lot of emails from listeners asking me about certain feelings they have about being sad, depressed, downright depressed, and anxiety, or even some listeners want to know if they might have a bipolar disorder, something more serious. But I don't diagnose anybody over the radio, nor do my guests, and we don't give therapy for that matter, so we don't have a therapeutic relationship. But today, my honor guest is going to be talking about some of the symptoms of depression and anxiety. We're also going to offer a variety of remedies, which she has in her latest book, some suggested medical and non-medical approaches to finding emotional balance in your life, even in the most stressful times. So again, we're talking to my special guest today. Her name is Dr. Mary Noelle Miller, and we're talking about her latest book, which is a great read. It's called Finding Your Emotional Balance. And Dr. Miller, by the way, is a professor of psychiatry at Quillen College of Medicine. That's, of course, East Tennessee State University. She specializes in psychiatry and in child and adolescent psychiatry. And she's affiliated with Woodridge Hospital. And so we got to pull her up on the line here. And welcome, Dr. Miller. So nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Well, you and I were just talking. It's great to have you. You and I were just talking about, you know, just sort of finding our emotional balance. And we were laughing because, not kind of laughing, but you and I were trying to contact each other earlier, and we got a little off balance because that weather back east right now, that's really tough. They had to close the university. Is that what you said?
They did.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting ready to be hit with a blizzard.
Oh, I know you are. So, well, listen, thanks so much for taking the time out to come on the air with us. And I always love to, you know, explore authors' reasons for writing their books. So right off the bat here, maybe you can share with listeners who, by the way, I encourage to email me if you'd like, if you have questions as we go along today at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So why did you write this book, Dr. Miller, Finding Your Emotional Balance, it's called?
Well, I really had wanted to write a book like this all my life because of all the experiences I've had, both personally and professionally, that I felt the desire to try to reach out and help as many women as I could deal with some of the things I have learned about over the course of my life. In my childhood, my mother had severe depression, which had a very big impact on our family.
Sure.
And she died when I was 18, but she never really fully recovered from her depression.
Oh.
The treatments back then were not very good.
Nope.
And then when I was in my 20s, I personally experienced a very severe depression. And it really derailed me temporarily while I was trying to go through medical school. But I was much more fortunate than my mother and was able to fully recover and has been very fortunate throughout my life. And I've chosen to specialize in women's mental health throughout my life in my career and have worked with women who are premenstrual or pregnant or postpartum or perimenopausal and all the different stages. And then the one other thing that has happened to me personally is that 5.5 years ago, I lost my husband very unexpectedly.
My goodness.
We had been together 32 years, and he wasn't sick a single day. And so that was devastating. And so I learned about grief
as well as
depression personally. And so when my university gave me a 6-month sabbatical, I was the chair of my department for 10 years. And when I sat down, I got 6 months off and requested to be given the chance to write a book, and this is the book that I started then.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that, you know what? There's nothing like, really, an author and a professional like you who can share, you know, their personal experiences and what they experience and really legitimize others' feelings and what they're going through in their particular stages of life. And you did go through a lot.
Right. So many people don't understand what's happening to them when they do start to develop a problem.
Yeah, I agree. And it does. It does sort of life sometimes and the stressors out there. And not to mention, of course, what we have inherited, you know, from our parents. If they have a biological propensity towards depression,
you know,
the chances of us getting that are pretty good as well, you know.
Right.
So good for you, girl, for doing it. I'm so impressed with you and what you've done and how you help others and reach out, and particularly your studies to help women. It's just lovely. So you've been there and done that yourself, and now you're a medical doctor, psychiatrist. You've been doing that for quite a long time, and you're sharing your story. So what I really also enjoyed about your book, too, is that you kind of follow women's life stages from adolescence to old age, basically. So what I'd like to do is sort of kind of go through those stages. So if anybody's listening and is going through those particular stages or has someone in their life, maybe they can get a little more insight as to what's going on in terms of some of the problems, you know, that can occur in their lives, the common things that actually come up in our lives. So can you share, let's start off with the stage of adolescence. Now, this is, you and I, I'm sure, see a lot of adolescent girls in our practice because this is hormone chaos, as I call it.
Right.
So what are maybe some of the problems that commonly occur in girls' adolescence life stage?
Well, the period of adolescence can be very confusing for many people, and for girls, the puberty is the time when depression starts to become more common than for boys. And so with the onset of puberty, girls start having mood swings. They may start to have more emotional struggle. They are trying to develop their own individual identity and how to define themselves separate from their parents.
Mm.
Sometimes they really struggle with that, and they can become depressed, become anxious. They sometimes develop eating disorders or substance abuse. So there are many ways in which they can go off track during those adolescent years and they need some help.
Sure. Boy, can they ever. So, go ahead. I'm sorry, Mary.
One other point about adolescents is that when they get depressed, they may not consciously realize it.
Right.
And sometimes it can demonstrate itself through acting out behavior. So they can just become very difficult and irritable. Mm-hmm. And when underneath it all, perhaps they're depressed.
Mm-hmm. And would you attribute that to much of that actually to hormonal issues going on?
Yes, I think that's definitely part of it. Mm-hmm. So every woman has hormonal changes that occur throughout her life. Mm-hmm. Some women are more vulnerable than others. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, the hormones definitely play a big role in the mood swings. And for some people, it may make them more likely to turn into more of a full-blown problem,
mm-hmm.
like such as depression.
Oh, sure. We see that a lot. It sure is. And, you know, there's so much, don't you think also, Dr. Miller, there's so much going on in our social media world that these adolescents, you know, were born into, and they judge themselves and their self-worth by, you know, comparing themselves with others out there in social media, which really isn't a true picture of how people are. I mean, it's all, much of it is a facade about how they should look, you know, how they should act and how everything.
Oh, absolutely. So at that time of life, most people don't have a solid sense of themselves yet. And so girls can be very much affected by unrealistic images of bodies in the media. And also they're so eager to be approved of by their peers that can make them much more likely to make bad choices during that period of life.
Boy, is that true. What I hear from most adolescent girls who come in to see me is, you know, I'm a lot closer to my friends than my parents or my siblings. I'm so much closer to my, you know, and that's very common. It's very common.
Right.
But again, yeah, we're trying to compare ourselves and get an identity search as we talk to other girls and that kind of thing. So it's really interesting. So as moms or aunts or mentors, grandmothers, whoever, how can we as females sort of help our adolescent girls with the mood swings and the depression and many issues associated with PMS even?
Right. Hmm. Well, I think one thing is to have realistic expectations because it's normal for teenagers to try to distance themselves and create their own identity. So you don't want to overreact to it.
Right.
But at the same time, if you can keep the door open to have good communication with your daughter and also try to avoid voicing your own doubts, for example, about your body, that can help your daughter not to be as concerned about her own body. And just generally, you know, there's a fine line during those adolescent years for parents between offering enough nurturance and also setting clear limits so that, you know, you can guide your adolescent as they're going through those years.
Sure.
So
you
want to provide some structure for them in their lives, but at the same time, you know, keep supporting them and showing them that they're loved.
Absolutely. That's beautiful advice. That really is. You know, a lot of times, and again, I deal with moms and daughters, and, you know, you're right, Dr. Miller, a lot of moms and aunts or mentors, caregivers, whoever, project their own stuff onto their kids, unresolved stuff that they really, their issues that they haven't dealt with, and their bodily fears and their fears about life and their low self-esteem. And it really, boy, we really have to be careful these days because we are aware of how much that affects, you know, our adolescent girls. Really is.
Right.
By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and here on LA Talk Radio. I'm talking to Dr. Mary Miller. She is a professor of psychiatry at Quillen College of Medicine, East Tennessee State University. She specializes in psychiatry and child adolescent psychiatry. And, of course, Dr. Miller is affiliated with Woodridge Hospital. We're talking about her new book. It's called Finding Your Emotional Balance. And Dr. Miller is terrific because she is applying her three decades of experience as a psychiatrist and also coming from her own personal place, going through life stages and some issues to help women of all ages cope with the demands of all of the world's stuff and all the stuff we place on ourselves, by the way. If you would like to email me, if you have a question for Dr. Miller or myself, do it, guys. You can contact us here live on the station right now, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And we're talking about, you know, some of the common issues that occur in women at different stages. So let's move on to the next stage that you talk about, Dr. Miller. It's the childbearing age. So there's a lot of common issues going on there. Can you share with us some of the things that you see happening in that age bracket?
Sure. There's so many aspects of the whole childbearing challenge that can affect the way women feel. Mm-hmm. So some women may not want to become pregnant, and they deal with ways to avoid that. There are women who are unable to become pregnant, and that can have a huge emotional impact. And then there are women who have emotional challenges that occur either in conjunction with pregnancy or postpartum. So in that chapter of my book, I talk about all of the different aspects of that. I have a separate chapter on premenstrual issues. So during same years, mm-hmm. for women who aren't dealing with pregnancy, there's also the whole mood swing issue that's often not really understood and is minimized by many. But mm-hmm. as far as childbearing itself goes, it's just a very complicated time of life when there are so many new challenges.
Yeah.
So,
boy, there sure are. And
I spent a good bit of time in my book talking about what occurs during pregnancy mm-hmm. and what is and is not healthy during pregnancy, and then also what can occur postpartum and how to tell the difference between baby blues that occurs to very many women and it's not a really serious illness.
Sure.
It's just time limited versus postpartum depression that can be very serious.
Yes.
All through my book, I try to describe the different things that can occur and make suggestions on what you can do if you think that you're developing them.
That's terrific. It really, you know, helps a lot. And I don't know about you, but I'm sure it's such a common thing. I hear pregnant women who come in to see me ask me questions because they're experiencing depression or they're, you know, they have maybe a bipolar issue, and they have been on antidepressants for a long time, and then or mood stabilizers, and they want to continue being healthy mentally. But can women take antidepressants and mood stabilizers and other psychiatric meds while they're pregnant?
Well, that's a huge question, and I devote a lot of time in the book to the potential consequences of taking the various medications you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. one thing that we now know is that untreated depression can affect the baby. Can affect the baby as well as the mother.
Mm.
But on the other hand, the variety of medications that you mentioned have potential effects as well. It's a pretty complex issue.
Sure.
The mood stabilizing medications tend to be the most dangerous ones.
Yeah.
As far as antidepressants goes, there are some things that we know, and there's so much more that we still don't know.
Yeah.
So I guess really the best thing is for each woman to talk to her doctor about the pros and the cons, because there's no issue without no choice
right.
without risk when it comes to treating or not treating depression or bipolar disorder, anxiety during pregnancy, because you really have two patients. You have the mother and the baby, and both mm-hmm. will be affected.
Boy, is that for sure. And I guess you're right. I mean, you do have to weigh, do I have such a severe depression, you know, that taking this medication or even the bipolar swings, which might be dangerous for both, as you said, is this so severe that maybe the benefits of taking the medication outweigh the consequences of not? You know,
and one other point is that therapy can be as effective as medication
mm-hmm.
from all the moderate levels of depression.
Yes.
So this is a great situation for someone to try therapy first.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think you are so right. In your book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, you know, you're talking about different stages of women. And in that, you know, something in that childbearing age that I'm seeing, and I know you're seeing as well, is the fear of women in their 30-somethings and maybe 40-ish, the body clock. And
right.
They haven't found a mate. They're really considering, you know, being a single mom. And you know, this fear of, I really want to have children. And I, you know, it really can grapple someone and have them become very depressed and very stressed out. So this is a common thing going on in our society, because I think people are waiting to become married or, you know, become with a partner a little later in life.
Right.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting, all the changes in our medical technology that are now available. So women can choose to do things like, you know, have their eggs be saved for later if they haven't found a partner yet and things like that. But yes, you're absolutely right. This is a really big challenge for women going through those decades, is are they going to have children or not, and knowing that that biological clock is ticking.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, boy, it sure is. Sure is. Guys, if you want to email me, I have a couple of emails coming in already, but I'd like to just kind of move on here and find out a little bit more about what Dr. Mary Miller says in her book, which we're talking about today, Finding Your Emotional Balance, about the different, you know, stages of life. Again, email me if you'd like, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So we've talked about the adolescent years, moving on to the childbearing years, and the next one is, which you refer to, is the sandwich generation. I love that phrase. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, the sandwich generation refers to being in a situation where you may be taking care of both a generation older than you and younger than you. So many people, it's many women around the same time that their body might be approaching menopause, also maybe taking care of their elderly parents and their adolescent children, or some combination like that. So it can present a real challenge and can cause women to feel so stretched and depleted if they're the caretaker for so many people in their lives.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. And also, you know, there may be perimenopausal things going on. I mean, now there's more hormonal changes going on within the body, right? And then we have these exterior issues. We're trying to juggle everything.
Absolutely. So we used to think that menopause was a time when women were really prone to depression, but what we now know is it's those 7 to 10 years before the menstrual cycle actually ends, before true menopause. Those are the years called perimenopause, when women are especially at risk for problems with their mood, like depression. So you got a lot of things happening at once during those years.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness, you sure do. So how can women in these stages right now sort of, I mean, and this seems to be a really heavy stage, and I'm not discounting any other stage in life, but possibly because I'm experiencing it. You know, I mean, I'm the sandwich queen here, you know. So how can we best really manage some of our depression and stress associated with this sandwich generation situation we're dealing with?
Well, you know, there's no one easy answer, but I think there are many different strategies that can help. So one thing would be to really make sure that you're also taking care of yourself as you're trying to take care of others. And that can include having a healthy diet. Exercise is something that can be incredibly beneficial. And so many women in this time of their life think they don't have the time to do that because they're so exhausted taking care of everyone else. But something as simple as taking a walk for 30 minutes can really help you to feel better any given day.
Yes.
And then another really important strategy is having people that you're connected to, developing a support network, and having a confidant, because it's known that having the presence of a confidant really protects people, and especially women, against depression. So you need other people.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing I would say is just giving yourself permission to set limits, because you can't do everything for everybody. And so, you know, if you're starting to feel really depleted, you may need to drop off a committee or, you know, find some ways that you can set limits.
Boy, is that true.
And
setting those limits, and also, you know, like you said, getting, and in the book, you know, getting proper nutrition, good exercise, being able to have alone time. and right. and other support through friends, social support. And there are meetings for folks who are going through the sandwich generation, and in every generation, actually, we're talking about. There are support groups all over the country that you can find just by Googling that can be nonprofit organizations, folks. Or I know some of the hospitals out here, Dr. Miller, have regular groups that they offer for all sorts of life stages for free, where people can just come together and really get support for each other.
So I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention that for some women,
yeah.
the problems may develop into something more serious,
yeah.
where they might really need therapy and or medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I treat depression and anxiety more than anything else, and I tell my patients I really enjoy treating depression because I get to see people get better and get their lives back. All
Isn't
the time. So
yes.
there are good treatments available now, so much more so than was true in my mother's time. And so I would say if you're thinking that it might be more serious, especially if you're having changes in your sleep, appetite, energy, concentration, things like that, or if you ever have suicidal thoughts, you should go to your primary care doc
mm-hmm.
first
mm-hmm.
and make sure there's nothing else happening medically. And they probably will do some blood work, check your thyroid to make sure it's okay.
There you go.
And then you may need to see someone to get evaluated for depression or an anxiety disorder if it's more serious.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you're so right. What I really enjoy about your book and reading your book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, Dr. Miller, is, you know, you do offer medical advice as well, and also some therapeutic suggestions. You also talk about medications. You have a great reference guide in the back of the book. And also, there's a great reference guide about different mental conditions. So you can understand what you might be going through if you're reading this book, saying, wow, do I meet the criteria for a major depression? You know, do I have generalized anxiety? You know, someone said that I'm anxious all the time. So it's very helpful in understanding
right.
what you can do to help. And I really, you know, I always appreciate that, especially, you know, a lot of psychiatrists really, you know, are medicine based, but you are both. You're very well versed in, of course, helping people psychologically, and again, you've been doing this for 30 years, and you've been through that and been there and done that,
well,
Dr. Miller. You've had a lot of situations that are going on and have gone on in your life, so you are truly a wonderful role model and strong woman. Perfect person to write a book like this. It's actually a guide for women. Guys, please don't tune out. I want you to listen as well here on LA Talk Radio on the couch with Dr. Michelle, because really you can learn more about the women in your life from this book and what they might be experiencing, and possibly offer some suggestions. This is also great for moms, siblings, female grandmas, aunts, to sort of help out, you know, their relatives who might be experiencing difficulty in different stages of life, you know, as well. If you guys would like to call in, that is fine, too. The number here in Los Angeles is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And, of course, you can contact me live at Doc Michelle, D-O-C, Michelle, at AOL, or straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm taking a lot of emails on both addresses here live. We're moving along to another generation, which is kind of moving into the senior years. And, you know, we see a lot of our parents or grandparents sort of slowing down. We see the women in particular, you know, dealing with a lot of depression states. You know, we're a lot healthier these days. We're living a lot longer, but we're slowing down. I'm not a senior, so I don't mean we, but I mean we're seeing a lot of seniors slow down, and it's very tough, you know, to try to help our elders, you know, in this stage. So what are some of the health issues, mental health issues, during the menopausal stage? I guess they call it perimenopause, which is, you know, and the menopausal stage.
Well, So, as I mentioned, perimenopause are those years prior to menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And menopause, the average age is around 50 or so.
Ah,
and then after menopause, the good news is for women who, for example, have problems with PMS, it typically will go away after menopause. And some women describe what's been called a postmenopausal zest. And so some women can feel better when they no longer have those mood swings.
Ooh,
but but the problem is, of course, in the elder years, health problems often develop. And so life is so unpredictable as you get older.
Sure.
And another issue for older women is that if they do become depressed, just like with adolescents, they may not consciously realize that they're getting depressed, but instead they may experience more physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the big tip-offs we look for, as I mentioned earlier, are changes in sleep and appetite and energy and concentration. As women are getting older, they will have more losses.
Mm-hmm.
Women typically live longer than men, and in the course of life, all of us experience losses, and so there's the accumulation of the grief that you have from the various losses in your life that you may struggle with, as well as feeling more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's so important for older women to not allow themselves to get too isolated, because that really promotes more depression.
Sure.
And if you can push yourself to get out and interact with other people, it can really help you to be healthier. And also exercise at that age is as important as at any other age.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of senior centers around the country where women can do that.
Boy, there sure are. And you know, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right, Dr. Miller. They do have the theories. You're right about you know, being more social. It really does stimulate us, and it helps us and makes us happier people, even if we're out there volunteering. You know, again, a lot of older women are a little, you know, more shy, and you know, there's some, you know, difficulty in getting around. Maybe they don't drive anymore or whatever, but there's certainly a lot of ways to get to and from, you know, certain social gatherings, or, you know, there's a lot of meetups out here in Los Angeles for people of all different ages, and clubs and groups, and again, volunteer situations. Where a lot of, I think, organizations would welcome the knowledge, the wisdom of a senior, you know, to help.
Right. So, for some, that might be a spiritual gathering, like a church group or something like that. And some may want to go to a gym or a senior center or a book club if they enjoy reading. There's many different things you can do to reach out to other people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you say the word depression is used by, excuse me, psychiatrists as yourself and other doctors when they're referring to a psychiatric illness, you know, like called major depressive disorder or clinical depression. It's not the same as a passing mood or feeling blue. How you know, sometimes can we distinguish, you know, between the two? What is that point that we may get to in our lives that could force us to say, I need to really go to a psychiatrist and find out what's going on? And we briefly touched on that, you know, sort of the things that hit us. But what is that line between, yeah, I'm depressed, I have, as we call them, environmental stressors in an adjustment disorder, or, wow, I'm having clinical depression?
Well, that's really a great question, because the word depression is used by everyone, and it doesn't always mean the same thing as the illness of depression that we look for and treat. And so I think a lot of people get confused because they'll think, well, such and such happened to me, so of course I'm feeling down.
Right.
And they don't recognize that maybe it's getting so severe that they're slipping into what we call major depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time in my book going through all the different symptoms that we look for and making the diagnosis, and also in how you differentiate between grief and depression. But basically, if someone's really getting clinically depressed, they get to the point oftentimes where they can't experience joy anymore. They feel despair. They may feel hopeless. Sometimes they have thoughts of wishing they were dead or suicide. If you're having any thoughts like that, you should really go and get evaluated.
Yes.
And then, yeah, there's a number of physical symptoms that we look for. If someone's grieving but they're not truly depressed, it will come and go in waves. But if it stays in this hopeless state of not being able to feel pleasure anymore, not having it, not enjoying your usual interests, that's much more the hallmark of depression, of major depression.
That's a really good thing to think about. It really is. What are some of the ways that you suggest in your book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, a guide for women, to help people sort of with their depression?
Well, similar to what we've been talking about. Well, one thing would be structuring your time.
Right.
And many people, when they start to feel depressed, they have this urge to withdraw. They may like stay in bed all day or not go out and do things with other people because they're feeling so down. They think other people wouldn't even want to be around them. And so trying to create a structure to your day where you plan activities, ideally with other people, and have a reason to get up in the morning or be around other people. And some amount of exercise is very healthy. Get a medical evaluation, as I mentioned. You may or may not benefit from a medication for depression if you're getting depressed. Really there's two extremes as far as activity level. There are those women we talked about earlier sandwich generation that are so stressed that they hardly have a moment to themselves.
Exactly.
Or, and that would apply to new mothers as well. And then on the other end of the spectrum are the women who are so lonely that they don't spend much time doing things with other people. So for some women, they need to set limits and preserve more time for themselves, whereas the women who are so withdrawn may really need to push themselves to get out and resist that urge to withdraw.
Yes, exactly. I agree. And again, some of the things that you talk about in your book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, that may likely lead to depression is negative thinking. You know, depression can be the cause or the result of negative thinking. And that's why they have the cognitive behavioral therapy, which you said, you know, is quite good, can be just as effective, you know, as medication.
Right.
Putting others first. We put others' needs ahead of our own. That's what we do, you know, and that can cause depression. It's like, help me, I have no support. And, of course, the need for connection. We crave this kind of bond, and sometimes we just don't have that because we're so spread, you know, thinly. And this is in all, you know, stages of life. We need to have more friends. We need to have purpose sometimes. And it's not, it can't all be, our purpose is, well, we're going to take care of everybody else and not ourselves. That's not too healthy.
Right. So one really fascinating thing about depression is that even if you've never been someone who is really negative in your thinking before, your thinking can become negative because of depression, but also negative thinking promotes more depression. And so that's why cognitive behavioral therapy can be so helpful. It can you slow yourself down with that approach and learn to see what you're doing to yourself, possibly unconsciously, that promotes more depression. Another thing I talk about a little bit in the book is there's a theory these days called the psychology of women or relational theory that perhaps for women more so than men, we really need to have connection with other people, to have a sense of well-being.
Yes.
And so if you lack that or you lose that, it can really set you up to become depressed. So it's something to pay attention to and put a priority on.
Yes, exactly. No, that's really true. Great advice. We're going to answer some emails if we can, Dr. Miller.
Sure.
Would you be cool with that? Because we have a couple coming in.
Sure.
I think they're real relevant to what's going on. We have one here that came in, and I think Brittany probably was listening from the beginning. She says, 2 months ago, I lost my father to a sudden heart attack. I have three younger sisters, and they live on the East Coast. I'm out here on the West Coast. My mother is really a mess. She can hardly function. How can I best help her to move through this transition? I feel I'm the strongest of all my family. That's a great question, Brittany. Thank you so much. So
it's
a difficult one. Boy, is that difficult.
Yes, it is. So grief can feel so overwhelming. And some people, when they're grieving, can feel like they have had a personal earthquake. They cannot really function anymore, and the whole, you know, other people around them may be the same, but the earth has shifted beneath their feet, and they can barely, you know, put one foot in front of the other. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the difference between grief and depression is that grief tends to come and go in waves. And so that, I guess what I would suggest to you, Brittany, would be encouraging your mother to allow herself to grieve, because we really need to do that. It's the one time in life that we don't, as mental health professionals, we don't want to rush in and take it all away, and because it's part of being human to grieve when you lose someone you love.
Sure.
But at the same time, sometimes grief can develop into depression. So if your mother gets into a state where she's staying continuously down and cannot feel pleasure anymore, and it's not coming and going in waves, but instead she's staying down, or if she develops any suicidal thoughts, that's definitely a reason to go get her more help, or gets to the point where she can't really function. But, you know, one piece of advice I have is for her and for you to try not to be too frightened by grief, because it is part of being human to allow yourself to cry your heart out sometimes when you've really lost someone that you love. You just have to watch out for when it's developing into something that doesn't temper itself with times that you feel the comfort of loved ones being around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That is terrific advice. Wonderful. And Brittany, thank you so much, you know, for opening up and sharing with this, you know, on the show, that information. And by the way, we're going to tell you at the end of the show how you can get a hold of Dr. Mary Miller's book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, A Guide for Women, and also, you know, just information to help you out as well. And we always encourage you to check out some of the local resources, you know, for grieving. It sounds like you know, you're having a difficult time because you live out here and your family's, you know, on the East Coast. So that is difficult when you, but there's always Skype. And try to do what Dr. Miller said in terms of, you know, encouragement. And also do take care of yourself, Brittany, you know, right?
Right. And then my one other suggestion would be for those around your mother to keep offering her their support and inviting her out to do things, and not to shy away from her because you know that she's grieving, because sometimes people get afraid to even talk about it when they know someone's been widowed. And so, you know, just keep inviting her, and she may or may not always say yes, but give her the opportunity to be connected with other people.
Right, exactly. Brittany, thank you so much for emailing me here at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And thanks, Dr. Miller, for that. That was beautiful. We have another quick email here from Kyle. Shall we tackle it? Seems appropriate to the adolescent years. Not adolescent, young adult. This is the childbearing years, actually, it looks like, that we were talking about. Kyle says, my 27-year-old girlfriend has bad PMS for about 7 days a month. She's very depressed and can be moody and downright mean to me. I find myself walking on eggshells at this time, and I can never please her. What would you suggest I do to make her feel better? That's a good question.
Well, Kyle, I don't know, Kyle, if this is necessarily something that you can fix, but there's some really interesting research that's been done on premenstrual syndromes in the last decade or two. So this is an area that I think has really been neglected historically, that it's so easy for people to kind of make light of it or make jokes about it, because pretty much every woman who is going through menstrual cycles can tell that she's got a period coming on with at least one symptom, but that doesn't mean that she's severely troubled by it.
Right.
But there's some women who really have a hard time. And so we now have a research that's been done on how best to help that small percentage of women that really have a severe problem when they're premenstrual. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's been discovered is that the SSRI medications like Prozac can be helpful even when taken only the 7 to 10 days before the menstrual period. And so that's just a thought. I'm not saying that necessarily that's what your girlfriend needs, but she might want to get evaluated by a doctor to see what's going on with her, and there are a number of things that could potentially help her. As far as what you can do, I would just say try to be patient and try to avoid conflict with her during that time, because she's likely that she's not her usual self and can't fully control her irritability at that time. And so the more you can be supportive to her, the better.
That's wonderful advice.
It can also help her to work on her own lifestyle, like modifying her diet and getting exercise, some things like that, because women who are premenstrual and having difficulty with PMS often report feeling better when they exercise and when they avoid heavy sugar load. They often crave that, but it tends to promote more of mood swings.
That's a great idea. That sure is true, huh? And we thank you so much, Kyle, for, you know, emailing us about this. And, yeah, I mean, that's a great idea, too, is, I mean, a lot of young women do, I see, kill themselves in the gym, you know. But, you know, even if you can offer at whatever times you guys get together a nice hike together or just a nice casual walk if you live out in a lovely area where there's no blizzard, you know, where you can take a nice walk and say, hey, let's go for a walk. Let's go hiking. Let's go up in the hills. Let's do whatever. And that'll get her feeling a little better maybe. Just encourage her and say, and then we'll go have a good meal. Or, you know,
that'd be great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kyle, also, you know, for that email. We really appreciate it. So we were going to talk about how to manage anxiety, because this is one of the most common things that I see in my practice. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave it up to you guys to get a hold of Mary's book. Dr. Miller's book, Finding Your Emotional Balance, will describe a lot of common symptoms associated with anxiety, depression, of course, different life stages, but you'll be able to, you know, understand what you might be experiencing and how you can help yourself, you know, as well. And guys, this is a great book for you to pick up, too, to understand women and those women in your life and what they may be going through. As Kyle, you know, just explained, he reached out to get some help to understand what to do to help his girlfriend with PMS. What's the best way to get in touch with you or to find out more about you and get your book, Dr. Miller?
Well, I have a website, and it's Mary Noelle Miller, M-E-R-R-Y-N-O-E-L Miller, at...
I hear you. I know. I think about that, too.
MaryNoelleMiller.com.
There you go. There you go. And it's, by the way, don't worry about it, Dr. Miller. It's going to be up on our archives tomorrow. So everybody will be able to just click on the link and find you and get your book. So
and it can be bought on Amazon or at Barnes & Noble or through Johns Hopkins University Press.
Yes, that's right. It's available basically everywhere. But check it out. It's called Finding Your Emotional Balance, a great guide for women. Dr. Mary Noelle Miller, psychiatrist. And also professor of psychiatry out at Quillen College of Medicine. That's out in East Tennessee. And guys, yes. So, and of course, you're affiliated with Woodridge Hospital. Been doing this a long time, and we thank you so much for your contribution. You know, to help
thank
out.
Thank you so much.
You're a great.
I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. You're a wonderful woman, and really strong, and so helpful to others. And sure appreciate all you've done. Thanks for being on the show today, Dr. Miller.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye. All right, guys. As I mentioned, again, all the information about Dr. Miller's book is going to be up in the archives tomorrow. If you have any questions or comments, you can get in touch with her. Or, of course, always write me here on LA Talk Radio. It's Straight Talk Doc .com. Straight Talk Doc. Actually, Straight Talk Doc at gmail.com. Well, duh, that's what it is. So give me a shout. It's about that time we have to go. Time flies when you're having fun. Dr. Michelle here getting off the couch. You can stay for more great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. Next week on the couch, when your relationship changes, what to do about it? With one of my favorite guests, author, Dr. Catherine Foster. Next week here on the couch. Thanks for listening, everybody. Do take care of yourself first, and then you will be great for others. Bye-bye.